From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. Joining me on the panel this week are Catherine Gibson, VOA congressional correspondent, and Patsy Wittakuswara, senior White House correspondent. And here are the issues. U.S. President Joe Biden has selected Vice President Kamala Harris to take charge of one of the biggest issues confronting his administration in its early months, the flow of migrants arriving at the country's southern border. The number of unaccompanied teens and children taken into U.S. custody along the U.S.-Mexico border surged in recent weeks to nearly 30,000 in February. The United States has been hard-pressed to provide enough beds to handle the influx and in turn find their relatives already living in the U.S. or people willing to care for them. President Biden's message for Central American migrants thinking about trying to get into the U.S., he says, "I can say quite clearly, don't come over." He said this at an ABC News interview this week, and he added, "Don't leave your town or city or community." President Biden is urging Congress to toughen the nation's gun laws after a shooting rampage at a Boulder, Colorado supermarket left 10 people dead. Biden called on the Senate to approve two bills passed by the House of Representatives on March 11th that would broaden background checks on gun buyers. He also called for a ban on assault-style weapons. Ahmad Alyssa was identified by authorities as the gunman who opened fire at a King Soopers grocery store in Boulder, Colorado, killing 10 people, including a Boulder police officer who responded to the scene. This comes on the heels of a mass shooting at Atlanta area spas on March 16th that resulted in 8 deaths. The majority of the victims were Asian American women. And we'll also look at U.S.-China relations as talks between the country's top diplomats started off contentiously. Welcome, Catherine and Patsy. Let's get started.
Patsy, I'll start with you. President Biden has tapped Vice President Harris to take control of the migrant surge at the southern border. What will her role be?
Yes, so this is her assignment, her first big assignment since she was sworn in January. She will be the White House's point person on immigration issues at the nation's southern border. We have a huge problem at the border. There's overcrowding in border facilities. There's a huge surge. Many are unaccompanied children crossing on their own, particularly because the Biden administration has ended the Trump administration's practice of expelling unaccompanied minors. So Vice President Harris will be working to slow the flow by addressing the root causes of migration. These are issues like poverty, gang violence, and other hardships that force them to leave their home countries. And she will also strengthen diplomatic ties with Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, the so-called Northern Triangle countries, including Guatemala and Mexico, to work with them to see what they can do to stem the flow, including providing funding. And they're talking about quite a big amount of funding, billions.
And Catherine, what's your take on this new role for Vice President Harris?
Well, I think that Vice President Harris has a tough job ahead of her, and she's really going to be looking from the U.S. Congress for support in terms of legislation. We know that that is going to be a very difficult road because immigration has always been one of the most contentious issues up on Capitol Hill. Now, there has been some passage of pieces of immigration legislation in the U.S. House of Representatives in recent weeks. Now that that's getting sent over to the U.S. Senate, we're hearing from a lot of Republican senators who are saying, look, we are not going to be passing the DREAM Act, which is going to be giving legalization, a path to citizenship for some of those young children who are brought to the U.S. as undocumented immigrants until this border situation is figured out. I was hearing from Senator Lindsey Graham, who was saying that this is an issue that is specific to President Biden. They are saying that this is happening because he said that he would provide a pathway to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants here in this country. Now, the legislation that is going through Congress right now would not address the people who are coming over the border and seeking asylum right now, So Republicans are kind of mixing these issues for the sake of a political argument.
And this issue has been going on for past administrations. When you go back through them, looking at the issues of borders and border security, I guess it came really more into focus after the 9/11 terror attacks. What kind of a solution is in store under the Biden administration, Catherine?
We know that in terms of any immigration deal, what Republicans are going to be looking for in return for legalizing some undocumented immigrants within this country is increased border security funding. This has always been the ask whenever there have been immigration discussions up on Capitol Hill. Many Republican senators who are visiting the border this week are saying that the Border Patrol is underfunded, that they're seeing the surge of migrants, and that they don't have the resources to deal with these numbers that are coming through. So likely you would get pieces of attractive legislation. Most lawmakers agree that the Dreamers should be legalized somehow. Then there's also another chunk of legislation which addresses agricultural workers within the United States. And most lawmakers agree that during a pandemic, it's important to keep the U.S. food security safe, secure, solid. And by legalizing some of those agricultural workers, you're able to do that. So you take those two very attractive groups of immigrants, and in return, you make a deal for some increased border security funding. That could be a way to work out a deal. The problem is that then you still have huge chunks of undocumented immigrants still within the United States and with their citizenship status still uncertain.
Patsy, I think Catherine laid it out really well. So a lot of the things that need to happen on the immigration front has to be on the legislative side, right? I mean, there's really not much that the White House can do, what the Biden administration can do, other than reverse previous administration policies, reverse Trump policies, and he has done so on a number of issues. For example, by boosting refugee admissions, preserving deportation relief for unauthorized migrants, and then not enforcing things like the public charge rule that denies green cards to immigrants who might use public benefits like Medicaid. So these are executive actions that the president can do. However, it is nothing compared to the giant problem of immigration that this country is facing, and most of that work has to happen on the legislative front, and Catherine has just laid it out really well for us.
Yes, this is a tough balance. There's a humanity side to this as well as enforcing the law and protecting the border. So issues that is going to continue to evolve. So let's now talk about another hot topic. That's gun violence and gun control. And Catherine, where does Congress stand on the two gun control laws that President Biden is pushing to get passed? And what will these laws require?
You know, we have an expanded background checks bill that actually passed through the U.S. House right before these very unfortunate mass shootings in both Atlanta, Georgia, and Boulder, Colorado. That's a piece of legislation that House Democrats have been working on for quite some time. This is an issue that comes up that I have seen again and again on Capitol Hill. The day after this country experiences a mass shooting, you get the usual groundswell of support from Democrats, and then you have Republicans who are pushing back on some of that. Of course, we also heard President Biden also call for a renewal of the assault weapons ban, which of course had expired. That is going to be a much, much tougher road to passage up on Capitol Hill. This is something where you have Democrats wanting to seize this opportunity to do some big picture, big wide-ranging legislation that is really going to address this problem across the United States. And thinking in particular of Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, who of course was very vocal after the Sandy Hook shooting of some of those school children. He has been one of the leading voices in terms of gun control here in the United States. He is going to push for even bigger picture legislation that is just going to be beyond the reach of most Republicans who do understand that there is some political will to get this done. So once again, as with immigration, the real answer here is for lawmakers to find a way to work past their partisan differences on this incredibly contentious issue and hammer out a deal.
Patsy, what's your take on this? And what is going to be some of the pushback expected in trying to get these bills passed?
Well, as Catherine said, this is one of these hot button issues. You know, like immigration, guns is just something that lawmakers cannot agree on. Administrations just go back and forth between Democrats and Republicans on the issue. But certainly what President Biden is doing is he's really urging Congress to toughen the nation's gun laws after the shootings and really calling on the Senate to approve those two bills that Catherine mentioned that would broaden background checks on gun buyers. The White House may also be considering other actions on top of the legislation that's going on, other executive actions. Jen Psaki, the press secretary, said that they're now looking at the legislation that's out there, but also looking if there's any gaps that need to be filled, any policies or proposals that have been introduced in the past that could be reintroduced, meaning that they're not signaling that they're going to say, yes, this is the kind of executive action that we're going to take. There is a lot of communication, however, between the Biden White House with gun safety law advocates. They've been really lobbying and asking the White House to use certain executive actions that can create tougher gun laws in the nation. The president, as Catherine said, is also calling for a ban on assault-style weapons. This ban was made in 1994. It expired in 10 years, so that was 2004, but it was never renewed because of stiff Republican opposition. But again, this is coming at a time when there are a lot of other things that the White House need to focus on, you know, obviously on vaccine distribution, economic recovery, immigration, and so on. So it's just unclear how much political capital the president can spend on these issues.
Yes, and you both have brought up a really good point. And back in 1994, there was a 10-year assault weapons ban. And this came just after the Brady Bill was passed in 1993 that does allow for background checks. But the assault weapons, that's expired in 2004. This was a bipartisan support, by the way, of both parties. But since 2004, there's been no major gun legislation passed, as you both have pointed out. So with all this time going by and in between all this time, we still have mass shootings that have occurred. So why do you think it's taken so long to get more major gun legislation passed, Catherine?
You know, I think it's a function of how our 24/7 media cycle moves along. Very unfortunately, from whatever the latest mass shooting is, I can speak from personal experience up on Capitol Hill, where I've been in the hallways talking to lawmakers the morning after one of these mass shootings has happened. You hear the sadness, you hear the expressions that we have to finally move on something. And then very unfortunately, we move on from it. And there's, as Cassie mentioned, so much going on in this new Biden administration. And there's only so much political capital that the president can spend up on Capitol Hill. And frankly, knowing that this is such a hot button issue, knowing that Republican lawmakers are going to want to protect their constituents who very deeply believe that gun rights are important and vote based on those gun rights, that is going to be very difficult to get them to move on this. And, you know, you mentioned that 1994 assault weapons ban. That was a very different political atmosphere when both sides were willing to be working together. That is not the atmosphere up on Capitol Hill right now.
And I would add to that just the power of the gun lobby, right? The National Rifle Association is one of the most powerful, most well-funded, most organized lobby up in Capitol Hill. And they are feared by lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. Now, granted that in the past few years, the NRA has been hit by some scandals and maybe weakening, and the anti-gun or the gun safety lobby, including one that is organized by Gabby Giffords, this was a lawmaker who was shot and now she's organizing on the other side, they have grown in strength in recent years. So this, again, is something that we need to look at in terms of how American lawmakers decide where to vote on. But just to underline the problem again, this is huge, okay? 45% of the world's civilian firearms belong to Americans. This is like 120 guns for every 100 residents. Now, it's not like every single American has 1.2 guns. Obviously, the guns are owned by a small group of people, but these are people who are very passionate about the Second Amendment, which is the right under the Constitution to bear arms.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at the increase of hate crimes against Asian Americans during the COVID-19 pandemic and relations between the U.S. and China. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two, then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, Catherine Gibson, VOA Congressional Correspondent, and Patsy Wittakuzwara, VOA Senior White House Correspondent. On March 16th, a mass shooting at Atlanta area spas resulted in 8 deaths. The majority of the victims were Asian American women. Patsy, President Joe Biden met with the Asian American community in Atlanta, and you covered this story and reported that hate-fueled incidents against Asian Americans have been particularly challenging to combat.
So there's a couple of reasons for that. One is because the incidents are not all reported, and this is not just limited to hate crimes or hate incidents against Asian Americans. When you're reporting a hate crime or when you're charging a hate crime, you need to be able to prove that the motive is based on race or religion or sexual orientation or some other perceived traits, right? So when somebody's murdered, is it because that person is from a particular ethnic, or is it because of a love crime or some other kind of crime? That's always very difficult to prove. And the second, which is particular to the Asian American community, is this model minority myth. So there is this stereotype within the U.S. that Asian Americans are the kind of minorities that we want because Asian Americans, the stereotype is they're hardworking, they're professional, they are very educated, they teach their children education and family values. This contributes to this idea that, number one, all Asian Americans are homogenous, monolithic, and they don't have personal struggles, and it really dismisses their experiences of racism. And the second one, it also pits Asian Americans against other minorities. And as we can see from the statistics, not all of the hate crimes are perpetrated by white Americans, for example. They're also perpetrated by other minorities. So that is a difficulty that is now coming up to the forefront as the Biden administration is trying to focus more on this issue. As you've noted, President Biden and Vice President Harris have met with community leaders last week to hear their concerns. And many are saying that the rhetoric from the previous administration, this is President Donald Trump, when he called the coronavirus the China virus or Kong flu and all sorts of other names that are making Asian Americans feel like they are being targeted, that they're being singled out during the pandemic. And it really has contributed to the discrimination and racism and hate-fueled incidents against Asian Americans. So the group Stop AAPI, that's Asian American Pacific Islanders Hate, have revealed that there have been nearly 3,800 incidents over the course of the year during the pandemic. So that is a huge increase. And President Biden himself has condemned the xenophobia. He has signed a memorandum to instruct federal agencies to bolster data collection, prevention of hate incidents, and to ensure that pandemic response is racially and culturally sensitive.
I just wanted to also emphasize a point that you made earlier regarding who is committing some of these hate crimes. Our VOA reporter, Masood Faravah, he had a very interesting report, and it's out on our website, that in New York City, anti-Asian hate crimes soared nearly ninefold in 2020 over the year before. Only 2 of the 20 people arrested last year in connection with these attacks were white, according to the New York Police Department. And 11 were African Americans, 6 were white Hispanics, and 1 was a black Hispanic. And this was during the COVID pandemic. So I guess you have to look at, was this out of fear of COVID?
Well, yes, that's the challenge. It's very difficult to prove intent in any criminal case, right? And that is a challenge for the courts to do. But as an overall phenomenon, there is no question that hate-fueled incidents against Asian Americans have been on the rise for the past year. And there is almost no question that the rise has been fueled by some of the rhetoric from the previous administration.
Catherine, I want to bring you in on this discussion. Where does Congress stand on this issue?
Well, there's actually a really strong group of female lawmakers who are part of the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus. And I'm thinking about some Senators Mazie Hirono, Chairwoman Judy Chu. They have really been taking the lead in making this a topic of discussion, bringing it back to the forefront again and again. And they've been working with the Biden administration on this COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, which would basically address some of the problems that we're talking about in terms of hate crimes reporting, ensuring that some of that information is more accessible to Asian American communities, and overall expediting the federal government's response to these hate crimes, because, of course, we know that they have been rising in this past year during the pandemic. And that hate crimes legislation builds on an executive order that Biden signed early in his administration addressing some of the racism, the intolerance against Asian Americans. This is something that Congress has really been pushing the Biden administration to work on. And I feel it from my reporting up on Capitol Hill, there is the political will to get this done at this moment.
I want to add, Catherine, that they're not just working with the White House, these female Asian American lawmakers, but they're in some way strong arming the White House. I mean, they're essentially saying appoint more cabinet level Asian Americans or we will not support your nominees. Now, they have walked back that threat, but not until the White House basically said, we will appoint a special liaison with the Asian American community so that we can better understand and represent their concerns.
Right. And that's a really powerful reminder that because Democrats have such a narrow control of the U.S. Senate, the voice of any one U.S. Democratic senator can really speak powerfully on issues if they disagree with the White House on something. So, you know, maybe that won't be enough from the Biden White House. And these powerful female Asian American senators are going to go back and say, look, we need to hold you to account on this, and we have the power to make this happen. That's a really important point to remember in this discussion.
Thank you both. We'll just have to quickly move on as we're almost out of time. And I just want to touch on the U.S.-China relations. We don't have time to go into all the details of what went on. We know that there was a meeting, a very contentious meeting between the top U.S. and China diplomats. But Patsy, just what would you say overall right now is the U.S.-China relations?
This is, I think, not just in terms of relations with China, but in terms of relations with other adversaries, including Russia. President Biden and his administration really is emphasizing the fact that they will be tough on adversaries, but also working together in areas of mutual concerns. So this last one that you mentioned is a meeting in Alaska, and one of the outcome of the meeting will be a joint working group on climate. It's still very unclear on the details of just how formal and how much working together this group will do, whether it's formal or not. But it is one of the issues that the U.S. want to engage China with because, of course, it is a country, the largest carbon emitter, and the U.S. is the second largest carbon emitter. And so these two really need to work together to control that. So the relations very strained overall. Another issue of contention is, of course, China's vaccine diplomacy. This is China helping something like 50 countries around the world, mostly in Southeast Asia, in Africa, with vaccines, Sinovac and Sinopharm. But these offers comes with strings attached, including, for example, asking some of these countries to reduce relations with Taiwan or even cut back relations with Taiwan. Other strings may include helping Chinese businesses thrive in that particular country.
And Catherine, your take on it.
This issue of Chinese vaccine diplomacy is a big issue of concern up on Capitol Hill from both sides of the aisle. And that's the reason why there was $11 billion in foreign aid in this latest COVID relief bill that the U.S. Congress just passed a few weeks ago, because they are concerned that we are losing ground worldwide in terms of making the vaccine diplomacy case for the United States. Any of these massive COVID relief bills that the U.S. Congress has passed over the last year, this is something that Republicans and Democrats are very concerned about. This is something that they are saying is going to be a multi-year effort to address how the pandemic has really hit developing countries hard. And lawmakers are saying that we really need to make sure that the U.S. is in there working with these developing countries so that we don't cede any ground to China or to Russia, for that matter.
Okay, great. It looks like we're going to have to wrap up our discussions on these thought-provoking topics at this point. I want to thank our panelists, Catherine Gibson, VOA Congressional Correspondent, and Patsy Whitaker-Zwara, VOA Senior White House Correspondent. This program is produced by the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis. Thanks for listening.